You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Before we introduce today's guest, just letting you know that today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Go download that app. It's the best way to buy and sell tickets right off your phone. And we'll hear from them again later, but Carter Rodriguez is today's guest. He's from Fear the Sword and 120 Sports. Carter, how's it going?
It's going good. A group of my friends won our kickball championship, so we had a Sunday fun day. I arrived home, realized I was absolutely hammered, had to take a little 2-hour nap to sleep it off, but I'm back to like at least 85%.
That's good. That's also a very millennial Sunday thing to do. So like I'm proud of you for like
playing kickball. Sunday fun day.
Yeah,
it's really kind of embarrassing.
I'm glad you fit the brand. Like
sure. Like I know what I am.
Yeah, you know what you am. You live up to it.
Yeah, think piece writers think that I ruin everything.
Yeah, they think you probably, you know, didn't know who you're voting for in the election or something. Like,
sure.
Or, like, you know, that you just think...
Millennials ruined potted plants or something like that.
Yeah.
It was all me.
I mean, dude, my day job, like, relates to... For those of you... Actually, I'm not going to get into this because it's a deep rabbit hole, but I was actually at something for my day job the other day where this guy, like, blamed millennials for not buying poinsettias anymore.
Well, sure. I mean, honestly, I've always thought millennials didn't buy poinsettias nearly enough.
Yeah, we should like clearly be using our disposable income to buy flowers.
Sure, naturally, yeah, which I mean, we don't have.
For landscapes we don't own. Anyway, Carter, before we get into some of these good questions that we got, and again, if you want to drop a question to us, lockedoncavs@gmail.com, @lockedoncavs on Twitter, and I'll 90% of the time I've answered a question everyone submitted. Pretty good about that, but... I got this question three times from people whose names I forgot to write down, so I apologize to those people. But
these people are never going to listen to the pod again once
they realize
that
they've been stopped. They're probably insulted, but from me to you, the listener out there who asked this question, I appreciate you. People have been the Cavs have kind of been not very fun to watch for about a week. Twitter's kind of been a place for a couple weeks for some hashtag reasons, and. There's just kind of a lot of negativity and angst going on right now. So I got this question what are things that I have enjoyed over the past couple weeks? So whether it's pop culture or something I read or like a positive thing that happened. Carter, I'll give you the chance to answer. What's something you've enjoyed in the past, like, let's say 2-3 weeks?
I've talked about this a little bit, but I think it's really cool how connected this Cavaliers team is to the overall tissue of the state of Ohio and the city of Cleveland, and in a way that I'm not sure I've ever really seen a team be connected. That could be a bit of a framing things through the lens of my own experience, but you see this team going to World Series games, doing bets based on the Indians, supporting the Ohio State team with LeBron got a couple guys from New Jersey, a guy from Oregon, like all these guys just to like get decked out in scarlet and gray. And like, I think that sometimes we can be a little like stupid when we ask athletes to like love the sports teams of the towns they play in. But, and I don't know if, and I still think we shouldn't do that. But at the same time, it's really cool to see a team come together and say, hey, we're going to be more than just people wearing laundry. We're going to be symbols for the city and for the region in a way that's really supportive and fun. And it just makes everything feel connected. It really builds a sense of community. And I think the Cavs have done that in a way that's really cool. It's just fun. Like it makes everything feel more connected. And it's obviously been a divisive like year or so. And like having this thing of like, okay, we're all in this together kind of thing is really, really fun. And I don't know. I hope it doesn't stop. I hope LeBron continues to foster that kind of feeling, because Tristan Thompson doesn't actually have to like Ohio State.
He I don't know if you saw the video with him and JR, Hook'em Horns.
He did Hook'em Horns, but he was there to support the community. And I think that is I think that's something that we shouldn't just let pass by, because it's actually kind of rare.
It is very rare. I agree with that 100%. I love that, especially because I think there was like a lot of people being annoyed with LeBron for that, or like saying like, "Oh, he made these guys like Ohio State." I'm like, no, like this is something like as a team you go do. Like you go to Ohio. Most of them were not wearing Ohio State gear.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were there to see what was the biggest college football game of that day. To go witness an environment that we all would love to be in some shape or fashion, and I think they just enjoyed it as people. Like, you can go to something and, like, celebrate and have fun with the Ohio State, because, like you said, they're buying into the community. Because, like, for those of you that don't live in Cleveland or listen to the show, Cleveland adopts Ohio State. The state of Ohio as a whole generally does that. There are pockets that don't. Like, certainly Athens, Ohio loves its Bobcats. Southwest Ohio, some of them love Cincinnati. Some of them love Miami University. Northwest Ohio, people like Toledo and BG. But like as a whole, like people love Ohio State. And the city
and in fairness, and Cleveland's not really much of a college region. Like I mean, no, there are some colleges there.
There's Cleveland State, and people are okay with Cleveland State. There's Kent State.
There's Akron.
There's
you know, smaller schools.
I mean, did you know Keith Dambrock coached LeBron? I don't know if you knew that, Carter.
I did know that.
I know he's sure he's brought it up when he's been in press conferences before. But
sure,
yeah, and it never has happened before.
But yeah, like in general, like I think that Cleveland, more specifically, they don't have these enormous colleges connected to them like Cincinnati does.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and they really do adopt Ohio State, and I think it's just really good for the community, and it's fun, you know, like, and it's funny because it actually, as I said, it doesn't matter if these guys are live or die fans. I don't think that makes it disingenuous if they're not. You know, a lot of people like, you know, kind of like, I mean, I don't actually mind because they're just trolling, but, you know, sharing that photo of LeBron in the Yankees hat, and it's like, that doesn't actually matter because he's doing this because he understands the value of it.
Yeah. I agree 100%. And just as a little nugget to this, Cleveland State is the biggest college in the city of Cleveland proper. There's not a football team at that college.
There you go.
Like, I mean, and just it's Ohio. I mean, it's Ohio State. This is how things work. I mean, it's just whatever. For me, I have three things that I've enjoyed. One, I started Mr. Robot, which has been a wild ride. Like, it's been a lot.
Don't know anything about it, so I'll spare everyone
it's the great
discussion.
I've already read from people that I like that said season 2 is a little bit too long and like wonky and stuff, but it's just so good, and I didn't realize it's kind of crazy that something this good is on USA Network, and I'm like a year and a half behind the pop culture zeitgeist watching this, so hooray me for like making time instead of watching like Jessica Jones or something again, which Jessica Jones is great too. But the other thing is I went back and read this New Yorker story about El Chapo that they're making into a movie, and I can't wait to see that movie. And I just like that article, if you ever read it, is like literally like you're like, I feel like I could eat.
Was that the one that was written by Sean Penn?
No, that was the Rolling Stone one. No, yeah, that was Rolling Stone.
That was
Stone.
Weird.
Yeah, I was in a journalism class that day that came out, I'm pretty sure, and I remember like the professor I was talking to like got really pissed off about it.
Wow. Most people did, but anyway.
But sorry. I was in like the perfect position for like some older journalists to be like, "God damn, Sean Penn," and like just get really pissed about it. The last thing I've enjoyed, and then we'll get into some actual questions about the Cavs and basketball stuff. This is my nerdy thing. The CW has like all the DC shows, and it was literally like the happiest like 4 days of television I've ever watched in my life. It's just like so like happy and
didn't they do like a big mashup thing?
Yeah, they did like
I personally don't watch those shows, but I watch Jane the Virgin and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend because I'm my own special kind of nerd.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is great. I've never watched
Both
Jane the Virgin.
Both
I've never
of them
watched
are
Jane the Virgin. CW's looking pretty good. If they want to sponsor this podcast, like I'm just saying CW, like let Stephen Amell like drop up and Gina, what's her name from Rachel Bloom from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, like they can drop a nice promo on the show and you can pay me
for honestly, that. I'll chat with one of them.
Yeah,
I'm in love with both of them. Now, those are two shows. The CW I think I'm going to get myself hired on as a consultant for the CW to give their shows better names, because a lot of people don't watch these shows because they have horrible titles.
Yeah.
But they're actually really, really good.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, funny enough, when you said talk about something we enjoy, I thought we were going to talk about Cab stuff we enjoy. So,
oh, yeah.
My bad.
I haven't told you.
Clearly misinterpreted.
I haven't told you. Pop culture is fair game. Like,
as I established, I am at 85%.
That 15% of your brain is like not quite there. Yeah.
I suited up. I played. I wasn't a DNP, but I'm clearly limited.
That's fair. I mean, so you're like, who'd your Cavs player comp and kickball be?
Who's my Cavs player comp
and kickball?
Yeah,
if you were a member of the Cavs and you're I guess you're like, I'm going to go like Jordan McRae.
Wow, thanks.
Well, like, no. You're saying you just described yourself as like not DMP, but you're competent. And I feel like Jordan McRae is like competent. And he gets, but you know, he plays.
Well, I'm a DMP with regards to my sobriety. Or recovering from a hangover. Okay. On the kickball field, I'm LeBron James. That's not true.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to insult the goat of Chicago area kickball, Carter Rodriguez.
I'm Birdman. I'm out of shape. I'm ultimately disappointing, but damn it, I'm a winner.
And people love you.
Debatable.
I mean, LeBron, literally, as a little nugget, LeBron, I don't know who was next to him last year, but Birdman's locker is next to LeBron's.
No. That's interesting.
Like,
it's just crazy, like, that LeBron has this, like, retirement community.
Yeah, him and James.
That he supports.
Yeah. I mean,
like, anyone who, like, Mike Miller, James Jones, it's just like, God, like, there's no better gig on earth than becoming LeBron's buddy.
I mean, DeAndre Liggins played with LeBron in Miami.
Hell, Damon Jones is on the staff.
I see him all the time, and I can't believe it. Like, every time I'm at a game, I see him, and it's just unbelievable.
Good gig if you can get it.
Yeah, I mean, just saying. But, Carter, you know what else is a good gig? Well, not really a good gig, but it's a good thing. SeatGeek. SeatGeek, if you don't know, is a sponsor of this podcast, and it's the best way for you to buy
SeatGeek is not a gig. It's a company.
Yeah, whatever.
It's a great product, but it's just a company.
A bad segue. But anyway, SeatGeek is the best way for you to buy and sell tickets. You can get it right on your phone. It's a free app. You can get it on iPhone, Android, whatever smartphone you have, or you want it on a tablet, you can do that too. It doesn't hate on whatever smartphone device you're going to use or smart device you're going to use. Right in the app, it's going to tell you whatever game or concert you want to go to, you can see exactly what every ticket price is from all the major sites. There's no hidden fees. You're not going to have any issues in terms of knowing what you're going to pay. And you can even see the view right from your seat in the app. If it's a green dot on the map, it's a good deal. If it's a red dot, it's not a good deal. And if it's yellow, it's just kind of an okay deal. So you know you're exactly what you're going to get with SeatGeek.
I've always wondered who's buying the red, who's getting the red ones.
People with money to blow.
I respect that.
But if people want to save a little bit of money, you can use the promo code.
Because I've always gone green.
Yeah, I'm a green too. That's because it lets me know exactly what I'm going to spend. I'm saving
and I feel
money.
Like a winner. And I feel like a winner.
And I always feel like a winner too. But if you want to save $20 on that first SeatGeek purchase, LOCAVS, LOCAVS, you can use that under the promo code, under the settings tab, and enter that in. You'll get a $20 mail-in rebate on that first purchase. My uncle, who listens to this podcast, you literally just use it to get Rangers tickets to New York. And we've used it. When he was here, we used SeatGeek to go see the Cavs and Mavericks play because he wanted to see LeBron for the first time. We got our tickets right in SeatGeek. Took no time at all. And it's a great way to see whatever concert or game you want to go to. So go download that app. Use that promo code LOCAVS and save $20 on behalf of Lockdown Cavs. You should totally go do it. So, thanks again to SeatGeek. And now we're going to get into some actual questions. So, Carter, we're just going to start with the non-fun stuff after we had some fun. First question from Slade in an email. Are you worried at all about the 3-game losing streak? And did you learn anything new about the team during this stretch? I didn't learn anything, to be honest. I just learned that what I knew already was that they have to play with effort to be good. And that when LeBron turns the ball over like 20 times or something like that in 3 games, the offense isn't going to be as good. And I'm not worried because every team has these lulls. They're kind of not playing very well or very hard. And it's December. Like,
yeah, and I mean,
and this is the first 3-game losing streak under Ty Lue, by the way.
Sure.
So,
we've learned that this is what the Cavs do. It's like, it's so hard to like invent anxiety about this team because like you know that this is what they do and they can still win a title when they play like this over the course of the regular season. Like, so no, I'm not necessarily worried. I did learn that to some extent they do miss a classic rim protector. Not to the extent where I think they need to go get one, but it just kind of makes your life easier on nights you're not trying that hard. It's like the Cavs' effort defensively has been, feel free to disagree, but I think their effort defensively in the last few weeks or the last few games has been exceptionally poor.
I mean, over the whole season, I would characterize it as like not good.
But the last three games specifically have been exceptionally poor, especially around the rim.
I think that speaks to what you're saying in that Tristan Thompson's not a great rim protector.
Yeah, so that leads me to my point is that so the Cavaliers obviously in the playoffs last year they benched Moskov, they played Tristan Thompson, Channing Frye, Kevin Love, pretty much all their big man minutes, and it was good. It was smart, but there is to some extent. You have to work really hard when you have bigs like Channing Frye and Kevin Love as two of your three big men in the lineup. You have to make sure you're rotating hard. You're defending at the point of attack. It's a group effort and everyone's working hard because when teams work hard against those guys and you're not working hard, you're going to get burned. It doesn't actually probably matter because they're still really, really good. And in the playoffs, they will try hard. But for the regular season, it would be nice to have, you know, like a Kostas Koufos, just a guy who's going to, you know, bother people at the rim, put in a, you know, yeoman's effort. I'm not saying they really need to go get one. And I really think I would rather them address their backup point guard situation. But I think we will see stretches like this where they just aren't getting gouged at the rim. During stretches where they don't care. And that's just going to happen with this Cavs team.
Yeah, I mean, and just to look at the defensive numbers a tad bit, overall for the year, they're 19th in defensive rating. In the past week, so dating back to November 28th, the filter I put in, they're 25th in the league, and they have that defensive rating during that time is at 113.9. That puts
not great, Bob.
Not great. That puts them behind the Rockets and the Wolves, two teams that have really struggled on defense. For, you know, different reasons, but, like, think about that. They have a worse defense than the Rockets. It's only by 1.4, but, like, they're worse than the Rockets.
1.4 is not a negligible difference either.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's, like, I mean, that's, and it's, like, a, you know, small sample size. It's a week, but it's, like, Houston's bad defense on purpose. And if, like, you're below them, like, that's not great.
Yeah, I mean, small sample size is fine to use as long as you're not drawing larger conclusions. Like, if we use that sample size to say the Cavaliers can't play good defense, we'd be stupid. But if we're using that stat to say the Cavaliers are not playing good defense, I think that's pretty fair, and the eye test matches the numbers there.
Yeah, I'd agree. And as this podcast comes out, the Cavs do have a chance to break that losing streak tonight, and it's against a Toronto team that's playing really well. So, I mean, they're going to have their hands full if they don't want to make it four in a row of this game. Kind of off of that.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, BOOM.
And you mentioned him already. We got a question from Perry Kellis who asked, do you think Tristan Thompson can be a full-time rim protector, maybe in shorter spurts, but I don't like it full-time? So I'll say this. I think the way the Cavs have constructed their roster kind of answers that question. I think they believe Thompson's their center. They know how important his rebounding is. And because he's just such a good rebounder at that spot. He's someone you can probably have to play against the Warriors in that series. They very much value Channing Frye as their backup center because of his shooting ability, and I think it shows. They value being able to switch Kevin Love into there pretty easily. And I think they just know that they probably are going to have an issue there because they're committing to Thompson as their center. Certainly, like, Mozgov wasn't going to be retainable for, you know, whatever reason, especially because of the money. And it's not so easy to find a good rim protector. But they kind of have Thompson as their guy, And there's, it's not going to, if that's their biggest issue, I think that's okay. Like, I think certain lineups against certain teams, it's not going to be that big of a deal, especially because of what he provides as a rebounder. And I just wonder how much a rim protector actually would help if that guy's playing 10 minutes a game. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't know exactly if that matters all that much in the grand scheme of things for where this team is headed. And maybe they need a guy like that when it comes to the finals, if like the Warriors just can run at the rim all they want. But I'm not sure that's going to be like the reason they would lose that series.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's, I mean, to it's kind of, I mean, not to, you know, parrot what I just said, but I think it's one of those situations where you feel his not ideal rim protection, not his not perfect rim protection. Sorry, my phone just went off because I'm super unprofessional. You feel that in the regular season when the rest of the team isn't all the way locked in, because LeBron at the three is one of the best weak side rim protectors. Like a locked in LeBron on defense, locked in, locked on.
I appreciate that. There you go.
But LeBron locked in, really. Like, I mean, he was a terror in the finals protecting the rim. And he is most certainly not a terror in these last three games protecting the rim.
No, I mean, Dwayne Wade straight up cooked him on Friday. Like, cooked him off his dribble.
Yeah, and even in, like, even in help defense. Like, I mean, it's funny, like, when you really, like, look at him, his effort on defense, there are so many layups he gives up in the regular season that are blocks in the playoffs. Where he's just like, yeah, I'm just not going to jump. I'm not going to, like, you know, exert the energy that comes with having to sky up and pin this thing on the backboard because we're going to win anyway and whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, so to that end, you know, that makes Tristan Thompson, who is not, you know, a traditional rim protector type, he's unbelievable defensively, just not in that spot part of defense. You feel it. And but long term, he is perfect for where the league is going. Switchability matters more than it ever has, and he's one of the best switching bigs in the league.
Yeah, like, so Timothy Mozgov can't, like, when the Cavs play the Warriors, you're going to see Steph Curry in the pick and roll where Thompson has to step out on him. You're going to see Kevin Durant in the pick and roll where Thompson has to step out on that guy. He is one of the few bigs in the league that I'm comfortable with a 6-second shot clock doing that five times a game or something. Like, he's so good at it. He's just so good at it.
He's awesome. He's awesome. So it doesn't actually matter that he's not the best rim protector in the league because of all the other defensive stuff he does.
Yeah. Also, and just it's one stat, and you can't chalk him up with being a good rim protector for it at all. But he does actually have his highest block percentage this year. It's at 4%. It's his highest since he was 20 years old back in 2011-12.
When he was just jumping at everything.
Yeah, and that was like when his like footwork was really bad, and like he was just kind of a project in a lot of ways. Like, he's if he can just be passable enough where he's altering shots to an extent, and especially because, like you alluded to this, not only is LeBron's defense going to be better, but like the Cavs can have lineups in theory where if like a Shumpert, LeBron, and RJ as the wings in a playoff series, that's a pretty good way of like defending guys that are going to dribble. Like, RJ is a big, strong guy that can defend twos, threes, and fours. LeBron is LeBron. Shumpert can defend one through three, and he's been really good defensively this year. Like, I think they're fine. Like, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
100%. I mean, a lot of their issues come down to effort because of the way their construction is. They're going to have to work a little harder against some teams on some nights.
Yeah.
And it's just they're not really doing that right now. But long term, Tristan is more than fine as a rim protector.
Yeah, I would agree. So then we got a question from a guy who has a great Twitter name. It's @Bosnian_BearNBA. Love this question. His Twitter picture is also Steve Nash with a busted up nose. So I'm kind of digging this Twitter presence right now. But his question is: are the Cavs missing Mozgov more than Dele right now? And that kind of fits into what we're talking about. I would say no, just because I think Dele really was the perfect backup point guard for this team. I think, you know, if he's on this team right now, they're set at every level. And Mozgov was really bad last year. Like, if you're talking about 2014-15 Mozgov, I think you have an argument. But I just think you look at how last year played out. Mozgov was bad and he was hurt. And Dele, sure, he was out of the rotation by game 7, but, you know, he filled a pretty clear role on the team. I think he would have filled the same role this year. And I mean, I would rather have Channing Frye playing than Mozgov on this team. So I don't think that's quite how I would see it, as Mozgov being missed more than Dele.
Yeah, I don't want to dive too much more into the rim protector thing because I've just, you know, kind of talked about it for the last couple of questions here. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I think that I think it's definitely Delly. But not in like they shouldn't have matched either of these, or they shouldn't have let either of these guys walk. It's just in terms of you do let guys walk, and those guys brought some things. And one thing that Delly really brought on a team that, you know, sure, they phased him out in the playoffs, and rightfully so, in my opinion. I don't think he played very well. But Delly is a great tone setter regular season player. He's a tryhard in the most, as much as Ryan Morton hates those kind of guys, they're really good for your culture.
Yeah.
Delly runs guys off the 3-point line during game 19 of the regular season, like it's game 3 of the NBA Finals.
Yeah, like the second minute of a game against the Nets, like that dude is like going at you to your grill and is going to come at you. Like it's great. Like there's a lot of value to that for sure.
And for a team that especially struggles with effort, it's really good to have that guy that just is killing himself out there. And I'm not saying that the other Cavs role players don't try hard, but a lot of those guys are older and they have to pick their spots and they can't just have this kind of frenetic energy.
Yeah.
Also, I think they miss Delly because Delly being out forces them to play Shump at the backup one, which means playing either Mike Dunleavy, who is still languishing, or Jordan McRae at the backup two.
Or DeAndre Liggins.
Or DeAndre Liggins.
Yeah.
But guys that aren't rotation players right now in their play. To be clear, before anyone yells at me, I'm not saying Mike Dunleavy can't be a rotation player. I'm just saying right now he's been very bad. And it's nice. It would have been nice to, from a Cavaliers perspective, to have the ability to say, all right, Mike, sorry, you're just not playing. And sorry, Jordan McRae, you're never playing.
Yeah.
And they don't really have that right now without Delly. But once again, that can be remedied by finding a workable backup point guard in free agency or via a slight trade. So who knows?
Maybe Dunleavy becomes better. You know, maybe he gets into the rhythm and stuff. And because it just seems like he.
Yeah, I just don't think they're really. I don't think they're really missing anyone that bad. This is definitely a splitting hairs situation. But if I had to pick one of the two, I would pick Delly because of the effort issues that I talked about.
The Cavs are just really good.
They're awesome.
They're awesome.
We're going to be nitpicking no matter what we're saying because they're awesome.
Yeah, until like April or May, we're going to be nitpicking. And even then, we're probably going to be nitpicking because that's just the need. Like, it's so much different covering a team like this than like a team like the Lakers where there's just so much like broader things you can talk about. With this, it's just like we feel like we're waiting a lot. And it's like even like that J.R. Smith thing the other day, it was just like, okay, like I feel like this isn't really going to be an issue in a month.
Yeah, whatever. Just move on.
Yeah, let's just
go on. I don't care.
Like, LeBron saying the honeymoon stage is over. Like, I'm sure you saw that quote after the Bulls game. I was just like, okay, LeBron, you're going to loaf on Monday. Like, I know it's coming. You know, like, I feel like it doesn't matter. So, next question. James Watson asks on Twitter, if the Kings offered Macklemore for Shump and a future first-round pick, would you make that trade? So, I'm not sure about the wording of this. Because it seems like a little confusing. Cause, like it seems like this trade seems to indicate that the Cavs would have to give up a pick.
It's a pick and Shump,
which
for
like,
Stein and Macklemore.
Yeah. I covered up one of the words. That's my fault. I don't know, and I would probably know because I think Ben Macklemore is not as good of a defender as Shump, and he's not really a good shooter. I like Willie Cauley-Stein. If you could get him in a different deal, I'm for that because I think you could fill his specific role. He'd fill a very specific role, and you could develop him in a nice way. But I wouldn't probably give up a first-round pick for him, and I wouldn't do this. I don't think Ben McLemore is that good.
Yeah, I kind of what this Ben McLemore is not very good. I will say it would be kind of nice to get out of Shump's money, but also with the cap spike, his money isn't. People see $10 million a year and they think, oh my gosh, that's way too much for a role player that doesn't shoot that much.
And I think Macklemore is about due to get paid too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So guys are getting paid now. So $10 million isn't horrible. It is funny because, I mean, the Kings would never offer Willie Cauley-Stein for Shump. At least I don't think so.
I mean, do you know that? But it's the Kings.
Yeah. I mean, fairness, it is the Kings. I mean, Stein's a super interesting prospect, but he is a little bit older. He played, I think, 3 years at Kentucky.
Yeah.
So his ceiling isn't quite as high as everyone else, as most second year pros are. But also, he's a freak and still learning to play basketball. So maybe, I don't know. This would be kind of, this is something that I think that we kind of forget when we're playing fake GM, is that teams don't make trades just to make trades. Mm-hmm. And this would be a trade just to make a trade, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree. There's not really an upside to that if you're the Cavs. Like, I think they probably get a little bit worse.
And even if not, it's just doesn't really address what they need. I guess if you really think they need a rim protector, but you really probably don't want to be counting on Willie Cauley-Stein to be a finals contributor at this point in his career.
No, not based on what we've seen. And I think he'd be better. He'd probably need to change of scenery or for Boogie to get traded.
Yeah,
but that's
he's certainly the centerpiece of that deal to me. But
yeah, he's probably his best upside.
Yeah, it's just a trade to make a trade, and that's why the Cavs wouldn't do it, and that's why the Kings wouldn't offer it.
Yes. So James actually has another question that I'd like. When the Cavs finally pick up a backup point guard, and that's him assuming they will, and we obviously don't really know that yet.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they'll cut Liggins just like Cunningham last year. So I would say he'd be the guy you'd think would get cut, but I also would got to remember, Mo Williams is still eating up a roster spot. Like, Mo Williams is still, like, getting them checks. Mo Williams is still sort of just, like, every time I go to a game and I cover a game and I look at the pregame notes, it's Mo Williams. He has the NWT abbreviation next to his name under the injuries because he's literally in Alabama or wherever he is, just not with the team. It's so weird. And I've asked people about this, and I can't really seem to get a – it just seems like they're maybe going to try to dump him as part of a trade. It's why I think he's on the roster. That's kind of my theory at this point. And I think they did feel a little bit. I think when he decided to come back, I think that they probably had an idea that was going to happen, and they're like, okay, we'll just see if it works as him as a backup point guard. But then like he retired on media day, like that was the first thing we heard at media day, and that was already past the deadline and all this stuff. So not
super
really,
weird story. I feel like a really big report's going to come out on that eventually.
Yeah, like I don't think there's any love lost. Is from my understanding of it, there is not really any love lost between the two sides. Like, and I think
that's what I've heard as well.
He had surgery. If you saw, like, he had surgery and was kind of throwing some shade on an Instagram post, and not great. But I mean, if they get somebody, he would be the guy to get, because I do think they like Liggins, and I do think there's value to having him around. Because someone else has kind of asked this, but I think he might be better than McRae. So
I am nearly certain he is, but also this is another one of those situations where it probably literally doesn't matter who's better, because they should be the 11th man on the team,
if not deeper.
Yeah, like these guys don't swing finals, so it's funny because like especially when you're covering the team from a, like you get this kind of microscopic tunnel vision. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like these guys don't really matter functionally. Yeah. Now, if you take a swing on one of these guys and they turn, and you just can find out they're a player, cool. But to count on that is folly.
Yeah. I remember like last year, people got kind of mad when they got rid of Cunningham. But
I liked Cunningham.
I did too.
I've said this joke before on podcasts, but I always joke that Jared Cunningham is direct evidence of why Russell Westbrook is so incredible, because Jared Cunningham plays like Russell Westbrook if Russell Westbrook wasn't any good at basketball. Like this freak athlete, completely out of control. like for Russ to finish any of these finishes where he's going 90 miles an hour at the wrong angle at the rim is freaking unreal, because Cunningham would try that stuff and it would bounce off the backboard all the way to freaking half court.
Yeah. By the way, Jared Cunningham is currently playing for a team called Jiangsu Monkey King in the Chinese Basketball Association.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's like a great team name.
I'll bet he's tearing it up over there, and I'm rooting for him. I really do. I was kind of, you know, talking a little trash, but I actually really liked his game. I thought he was a fun teammate, and clearly the Cavs team loved the guy.
Yeah, it's really even funny, like his like path to the NBA was so weird, because he got drafted by the Cavs. And then like he was in that deal where like his draft rights were traded with Crowder and Bernard James in exchange for Tyler Zeller and Kalina Azubuike, And then he played with the Mavs, and he ends up back on the Cavs after, like, bouncing around. He actually just tweeted about his dad visiting him in China, so that's pretty cool.
Nice.
Like, I hope he's probably making good money.
Sure.
So.
Hope he can get back to the league soon.
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up on this last question here from Perry Kellis. Thanks to everyone who put in questions this week. He says, this is more of a Canton Charge question, but Isaiah Austin was just clear to play basketball. Would you like to see Canton extend him an offer? As he's a stretch big who can defend. Sounds like a LeBron dream to develop. The easy way to answer this question is that dude, Austin, that he's clear to play. You know, he was maybe an average NBA prospect when he came out. He hasn't played basketball at a high level in like 2 years. It's a cool story. It's a million to one shot that he actually works out as an NBA player.
Yes, I think people kind of, well, I think this is, so I want to be very careful here because I think the story is incredible. And I think it's really great that he gets to do what he loves to do again. And you can feel that from the sport. But I do think after the news came out that he couldn't play again, we sort of retroactively wiped out a lot of his flaws as a player. This was a guy who never really put it together while he was at Baylor. And it was kind of one of the myriad Baylor 6'10", 6'11" guys that were super talented, but really didn't have an NBA skill set. And I think that was Isaiah Austin. I think the much more likely outcome for him, assuming he's able, you know, to get himself back in game shape, is to play overseas. And spend most of his career over there. If he, you know, he can figure it out and find his way over to the NBA, that would be so cool. And I really hope he does. But as you said, I think it's a million to one shot. Very unlikely. Because it's really hard to get in the NBA after you take 2 years off for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. That's a huge lack of development fee. Your body atrophy, it's just hard. It's hard to get back. And almost nobody has done it. And I know he's got a very unique situation. But I think a long career in Europe would be his upside to me. But I'm also not an expert on this kind of thing. I'm not a draft Nick. You know, I'm not a big talent evaluator. So I take this with a grain of salt. But I do think that we will probably not see him suit up in the NBA. Might get a tryout, maybe summer league.
Yeah, I hope he does. I'm sure we'll get like 5 features about Isaiah Austin at Summer League next year, which, you know, that's fine.
Which is cool. Summer League super boring, so it's good to have something interesting to talk about.
And I think saying like LeBron, he's a dream for LeBron to develop, it's probably like overstating what LeBron actually does as a developer. Mm-hmm. Like LeBron's
a player.
LeBron brings the. Oh wow,
Carter. LeBron's not a coach.
Yeah, I mean, but I get what he's saying, and I get the idea that he's a developer, but he's never really taken a guy that's been like an average player and like made him into like an NBA player that can stand on their own 2 feet. He just brings the best out of guys for what they're worth. Like, like Matthew Dellavedova, let's wrap it up talking about Delly. If you look at his numbers this year, he's doing some more in Milwaukee, he has more assists. He's not shooting nearly as well, and it's literally partially because, like, the Cavs had a bunch of shooters, but it's, like, a little different when it's, like, LeBron feeding you passes when it's, like, and Giannis has been incredible, and, like, outplayed LeBron the other night when LeBron was just, like, we're in Milwaukee, like, whatever. But, like, it's just different, and, like, LeBron, like, takes guys like that and brings them up. Like, Tristan Thompson is better because LeBron allows him to do, like, different stuff. Kyrie is better because LeBron allows him to do stuff. Like, J.R. Smith, guys, like, those are the guys he develops, quote-unquote, for whatever, however you want to phrase it. He doesn't really take a guy like Isaiah Austin, who hasn't played basketball in 2 years, who doesn't exactly, like, have the perfect skills to pair with him and bring him up. He's just kind of there. So,
I think that's 100% accurate. I think that's fair. I think LeBron, he's not a player development coach. He's not like sitting and like drilling Isaiah Austin for 20 hours.
Yeah,
a week. on his skill set.
Like, yeah, he's not going
to,
like,
you have to do the work, and he'll put you in your best spot. You do the work. He'll take care of you from there.
Yeah, but if you can get to,
you have to be at a base level. Yeah.
You got
to match. You have to be at a base level of competence. And so, yeah. But, I mean, it'd be cool if he made it, you know. I hope he does. I don't like to be a Debbie Downer, even though Twitter might pretend like I do. But I think it'll be really interesting to see him play. Hopefully he makes it to a summer league. And then, you know, from there, you know, anything can happen at a summer league. I mean, our boy Maurice Indoor from Ohio University made his way into the NBA in part because of a good EuroLeague resume, but also he freaking killed it for the Knicks 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you just get on people's radar that way, and Isaiah Austin will have the advantage of already being on people's radar for being notable. So, you know, you have a good couple games. Who knows? It'd be really cool. I hope he makes it.
Yeah, there's probably a team that would, you know, if he you know, is fully back and can play, I'm sure a team will take a chance on him.
Sure.
I mean, even if it's just a PR thing, I mean, that sounds bad and kind of cynical, but, like, teams do that. That's what...
Sure. Of course they do.
It's summer league, as you said, is kind of, like, overrated and a little bit boring.
Yeah.
Because you don't really learn anything. Like, I mean, just, like, Chris Dunn, great in summer league. He's literally shooting 30% from the field.
Yep. NBA is really hard.
NBA is really hard.
Almost nobody is good enough.
Summer league is, like, nothing.
Yep. Summer league is, it's not even the same sport.
No, it's really not. It's like a weird intermediary between actual basketball at the NBA level and, like, I don't even know, like, what it's like in between. But it's like a bridge that you have to go through. But, like, the bridge doesn't actually get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You're just kind of like treading water. So, Carter, thanks for coming on. You answered. I know we talked a lot about rim protection, but I hope that you enjoyed it, and I hope that I will. And your recommendation now, I'm gonna probably. What's the other CW show? I can't even. I forgot.
Jane the Virgin.
I'm probably gonna. That's the telenovela one, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's a great girlfriend show.
Okay.
Watch it with your lady. It's great. It's clever. Gina Rodriguez is adorable. I especially like it because I've got, you know, some Latino roots. And, you know, reminds me of the shows my grandma used to watch. But it's kind of a parody of telenovelas, while also clearly adoring its roots. You know, it's not like a scary movie thing where it's just, you know, kind of shitting on the genre. It's an affectionate parody, and it's got a good heart to it, and it's clever. Great show.
Yeah, my lady and I are watching House right now, so, like, that'll be good. Like, like getting out of the nihilism of Dr. Gregory House and his, like, Vicodin addiction. But, like, this is random, but, like, you love Hamilton. I love Hamilton. I'm sure. Watching House, and it's, like, the beginning of season 6. And who ends up being his roommate when House is, spoiler, in the mental asylum? It's Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, really? That's
funny. I'm like, oh, hey, it's Lin-Manuel Miranda. And I couldn't believe it. It's, like, I pull up my phone, I Google it, and he, like, literally did a stint on House before he was...
That's awesome.
Before he was, like, the dude in Hamilton. I was like, oh, hey.
Well, funny enough, he also did In the Heights. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, In the Heights.
That was his first show, which won a lot of Tonys and stuff. I think I won Best Musical, so the dude's a freaking genius.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's our pop culture talk.
Yeah, that is our pop culture talk. We just want to have a little fun with it. And again, if you want to have questions answered next week, drop them to lockdowncavs@gmail.com or to Twitter @lockdowncavs. Again, thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show. Go download that app. Use that promo code LOCavs and save $20 off your first purchase. And this has been Chris Manning. This has been Carter Rodriguez. We'll be back tomorrow to recap the Raptors game because the Cavs are going to look to snap that 3-game losing streak and get back on their winning ways. And if they win, or the winner of that game tomorrow, by the way, or today's game, rather, will be number one in the East because the Cavs and the Raptors are technically tied at the top of the East right now, even though their win percentages are a little off. But the way it works out, they're tied. Cavs do have a 2-0 series advantage this year against Toronto. So it should be an interesting game. But again, this has been Locked On Cavs, and we'll be back tomorrow.